Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And our way to our discussion, I just want to say that today, March the 3rd, is the 22nd anniversary of the start of the Mark Steiner Show that began at WJHU back in 1993. And I'm saying that to say thank you to all of you who have made this show possible, who have listened to the show for the last 22 years, who have supported our work. And it means a great deal to me that we're still on the air to bring issues about our community and our world to light, to fight what I think is for the rights of the disenfranchised in our world and have that be part of our programming here. And I want to thank WEAA, really, because in 2008, when other bodies sought to silence the Mark Steiner Show and put it off the air forever, WEAA said, please come here. This is your new home. And we've been happy to make WEAA our home since 2008. So this is, again, thank you all and all my producers who put up with me for the last 22 years and the intensity of putting out this program. We've gone through a lot of producers. Say their lifespan is like 3 to 5 years. And they go, I've had enough, and I have to go. But they've been great, and ours are the producers we have now. So, again, thank all of you for your support over these 22 years. Now we begin our political roundtable. We all heard the news yesterday that Senator Barbara Mikulski is retiring from the Senate. A huge event. A woman who has been in politics since the early 70s, who was a city councilwoman, who I remember when she was this tough fight, which she still is, but a tough fighting little teeny woman social worker from East Baltimore, stopping that highway from tearing up Lincoln Park in East Baltimore. And I remember all of that back then in those days. And she went on to become a U.S. senator, the longest serving woman senator in the history of the United States. The first woman to head the powerful Appropriations Committee, and is giving up her seat. What does all that mean for now and the future? Well, my dear friend and colleague, Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAA, is in studio. Good to see you, Anthony. Glad you're here.
Great to be here.
Odette Ramos is in the studio, a member of the State Democratic Central Committee for the 43rd District and President and CEO of Strategic Management Consulting. Good to have you in the studio, Odette.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Antonio Campbell joins us, Professor of Political Science at Towson University, former chair of the Baltimore County Republican Central Committee.
Good to see you, Tony Campbell. Good to engage with you again, and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. And former delegate Jolene Ivey is on the phone, represented the 47th District in Prince George's County. She ran on the ticket with Doug Ganser as lieutenant governor and joins us here now as a commentator since she's no longer in the House, but continue in her political views and thinking. Good to have you with us, Jolene.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm well. How are you?
Good.
So let's go around the room. Let me start with you, Jolene, because I know you have a shorter time than the rest of us here in this panel today with us. And our, just our thoughts on what, before we get into the politics of this moment, because it's going to be an interesting 2016, I think, coming up in just a year away from now. What is this passing of the baton, the torch, and what her life has meant in politics to you, Jolene?
Barbara Mikulski is definitely a force to be reckoned with. And I've become more appreciative of her as the time has gone on. You know, I knew her when I was a staffer for Ben Cardin. I was his press secretary when I was in my early 20s. So it's been a while.
And, not that long.
And I knew her, but I was more afraid of her than anything else because you sure didn't want to do anything to get her on her wrong side. But and I didn't understand why she was the way she was. I didn't get it. But as I've gone on into politics myself, and of course I'm also a woman, I'm not as short as she is. But still, if you're a woman in politics, it's definitely different than being a man. And when I see what she's had to go through, being a woman, during the time she got into politics, and being the size that she is, I mean, it's all part of it. She's had to be a fighter in order to be effective. It would have been very easy for her to have been overlooked, pushed aside, and she knew that. So she had to make herself known. She had to physically be pushy to get the things done that she needed to get done. So I respect her more every year, and every year that I've gotten more experience myself as a politician, it's like the aha moment where you say, that's why she's the way she is. She had no choice. I'm just really grateful that she did it for the rest of us, and she definitely forged the way for more women to be active in the political world.
That's very well put, Julian. I appreciate those thoughts. Where do we want to go next? Tony Campbell, and I want to hear another woman speaking about this woman in politics before we turn to our dear friend and always commentator, Anthony McCarthy. Tony.
Well, I don't agree with most of what Senator Mikulski stood for as far as politically, but I've always had great admiration for her. I interned for her in 1992
really?
With Terry Curtis when he was running her office down at the Trade uh-huh. Center. And I was in charge of the stool.
The stool?
Oh, the stool.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The stool.
The stool. All of us who worked for her had to be in charge of the stool at some point. I have a stool story, too.
Wait, tell us, what is the stool? What does that mean? Let's clear that up quickly with our listeners.
That, the podium, the speaker's podium was usually a little too tall for a senator, and she would have this step stool that a intern would have to be in charge of and make sure that it would be your political future or your future on earth if you did not procure said stool. And she's just a great lady, and I wish her all the best.
You have a stool story
well,
Odette
it's
Ramos?
A good one. So I have two really good stories that sort of exemplify her and her influence on women in particular. The first was when I was in college, at Goucher College, and I was a senior, so it was 95, and we just got a new president, so it was the inauguration. And I was student government president, and here I was talking about, oh, we're going to hold you accountable, and this is really important, blah, blah, blah. And I introduced her, and she gets up after me, and she said, Odette, you should have used my stool. I'm a short person too, right? And I can't. The podium was too high, so it was hilarious. And then, the stool went everywhere with her. I did work for her in '97. After I worked in the state legislature for Jim Campbell, I worked for Senator Mikulski for a little bit. And when you're staffing her, you're in charge of the stool, and you're also in charge of making sure that big people don't elbow her. Mm-hmm. And so you're trained on positioning so that she's, you have to be in the right position so nobody, knocks her in the head. I mean, she won't let that happen because I think she's pretty adept herself. But you're trained in doing that. And so one day I was walking with her in the, this isn't a stool story, but I was walking with her in Congress, and it was me and her and a couple of others, and she's walking in front of us, and up ahead is a set of very large, big and wide senators, men, and she, they were in the middle of the hallway, and she said, "Hello, everybody," and the parting of the Red Sea. I kid you not. They saw her coming, mm-hmm. they heard her coming, and they got out of the way. Mm. And I think that's the kind of presence that she has now there, and that's the kind of presence that I know I learned a ton when I was working with her, especially about having that kind of presence as a small person and just as a woman, that, you walk into a room and you make yourself known. And that's, these are the basics that they don't teach in school, so you have to learn it, as you're, uh-huh. Working through the process. So I mean, I think it's those tiny things that she really had an impact on a lot of women. And then, I think that she's helped pave the way for a lot of people, too. I mean, look who's in our state legislature. Delegate McIntosh is very powerful now and was part of, that.
That's right.
That group of women.
That's right. That's right.
Mary
That's
Pat
right.
Clark. I mean, those are right. the group of women that sort of are all my mentors as well.
And they all and began in the same era in the,
That's
in the,
right.
in the mid early 70s. Right.
That's exactly right. Right. That's exactly right. So I think she's had a big influence on a lot of us and on the state. And I'm hopeful that as she, continues to fight the good fight the next 2 years, because there's a lot to fight about, which is important, that after that she continues to help women along and to make sure that more of us get into those, really important positions, not only at state level but at the national level, because there's still work to do. I mean, there's only 80 women in the House and 20 women senators in Congress, and that's,
that's
not
nothing
a lot
compared
and,
to the, right.
Right. So we do have a lot of work to do, and I think she can help, pave the way in that regard.
And Anthony, you spent your time on the Hill.
I did. And, it's very interesting. I have a stool story as well.
Do you really?
And I've never worked for Barbara Mikulski, but she came to speak at the Baltimore City NAACP Freedom Fund Banquet. And when her staff arrived, I guess they said, you are going to have the most important job tonight. Because I was right up on the stage as a member of the executive committee, and they handed me this stool. And they said, before she gets up to speak, you put that stool right in front of the podium. And dutifully, I have to tell you, she said after she gave her remarks, when she came and she was shaking hands, she said, good job. Good job. So I figured I had really done something. But I have to tell you, Barbara Mikulski is an institution in this state and in the United States Senate. When she arrived in the Senate, there was only one other female senator.
Right.
And now there are 20. And she's considered the dean, never forgetting that when the Republican or Democrat, when these women come to public life, when they come to the Senate, one of the first stops they make is at Barbara Mikulski's office. And her thought process on partisanship is clear. We know she's a Democrat. We know she reaches across the aisle, but she's very proud of her party. But she really gives a lot of tips, advice, and counsel to these female senators, and almost to the person, regardless of what party you are in. You will account Senator Mikulski as a great, great mentor when you arrive in the United States Senate. Now, I have had the pleasure of writing about her, covering her as a senator. There were times when she disagreed with things I wrote. And ironically, she's not one of those politicians that would send you a note or call you.
Right,
but
right.
When she sees you,
then she says something.
She says something and remembers. She will remember and say, well, hey, great to see you. And then she goes, you know, I meant to say something or send you a note about such and such. You got that wrong. And I have to tell you, there were moments when that social worker spirit, that incredible public servant spirit would come through. And there were moments when she was alone, whether she was bringing up issues about the equality for women, and she had to really push against the tradition of the Senate, which is stoic and very different from the House, where she cut her teeth in the House. But I have to tell you, she did not fear standing alone. And was oftentimes, I remember Trent Lott saying, Barbara Mikulski is the conscience of this Senate, because she did not mind calling these big men who had been in office for a very long time out. And they deferred and they were very respectful. I think that she will, I will say something I know a lot of us won't say, but I think in these discussions, I think it is a rightful time for her to retire. I think it is a time.
Yeah.
For these offices don't come available very often when someone serves for 30 years or 40 years. I think it is time for a shift in the power of the party in the state of Maryland, and I think this is a very, very good time.
So let me go back to Jolene before we go to the phones here, 410-319-8888, American. The others, we're going to come to your calls, but I want to get to Jolene before she has to run. And I agree with everything people have said here about Mikulski, and she's also, one of the things we're missing in the Senate is the great Baltimore accent, which will leave
yes.
the U.S. Senate.
Wow.
And she is a heart with that accent that, you know, every time she sees me, she goes, we stopped that road. And yes, we did back in the day. So, so we've known each other for a long, 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 long time, Barbara Mikulski and I have, and before she was a politician when she was a community leader. And Jolene, I'm curious, you know, what you began saying and what Odette said, and this election coming up in 2016, how much the question of gender and who replaces Barbara Mikulski will play out in this election, do you think?
I hope that it plays out in this election. I would like to think that voters in Maryland, and especially the women voters in Maryland, are going to try to keep this seat in the women's hands. If we don't, I think we're kind of making things worse for women in a way. I mean, Barbara Mikulski did not work so hard for us, for women, for families, to have her seat, well, I can't say it's fall into the wrong hands, but that right now we have one woman in the Senate and one woman in the House in Maryland.
That's
and
right, that's
that
all.
Is just not reflective of our state in any way. So to me, it should go to a woman. And, you know, obviously someone who is qualified, and there are qualified women out there. So I really do hope that that's the way it goes. I was surprised in a way that O'Malley this morning announced that he wasn't going to pursue that seat. Personally, I did not think that he would be the right candidate anyway, but it does make it a little bit easier to have him out of the way when we start talking about women. Now, right now, that we have a pretty short bench for women who are in a position to be able to raise the money and get their name out there. So I do hope that the ones who are able to do so will step up.
That's interesting. I mean, that he would announce that so quickly.
Yep, he did this morning.
I was kind of shocked about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of politicians seem to be doing the right thing these days.
Wow.
and Jolene's the Democrat. I was the Republican. I was going to say that, but you know, that's all right.
Jolene, I hope you consider it. I hope you consider it. You did a statewide run.
I am not considering it. So
that's too bad.
Start.
Well, we miss you in Annapolis, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always something new to do,
right.
And I'm happy to do other things. But I'm sure that there are very qualified women out there that I will be happy to support. I'm not sure who's going to run at this point. It seems obvious to me that Donna Edwards would be someone who should give it some serious consideration. She's an African-American woman from Prince George's County. So far, the senators have been from the Baltimore area. And, you know, I love Baltimore. I went to Towson University and all that. However, you all have just too many. So it's time to choose well.
I love you, Julian. You're great.
If it's a person from Washington, from the Washington region, who is a woman, and if she's African American on top of that, nothing could make me happier. So the obvious choice there would be Donna Edwards. Perhaps there's someone else who should be considered, but right now I'll say go Donna.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I was really shocked when was anybody else here shocked when O'Malley said no that quickly? I mean, because it was a pretty definitive no. It wasn't like
was
a waffling no, right?
I was shocked that Barbara Mapolsky announced that she was retiring.
Me too. I didn't call that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she'd be there for another term at least.
Not at all.
Well,
not
and
at
the
all.
And
so,
the interesting.
I agree that it was the right time for her to go out.
And the interesting thing for those of us who are political insiders, I spoke to several of Barbara's staff yesterday. They did not find out until yesterday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Because they've been raising money. They've been assuming that the senator was going to run for a final term in the United States Senate. But they got the word from their bosses yesterday that the senator was going to make that announcement at 11. Now, interestingly enough, Donna Brooks has also taken herself out of consideration for the Senate. Donna Edwards, the Congresswoman Edwards, has already said. Yeah, she's already said.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. I didn't hear that.
I read it yesterday at 10:24 in an article written by Hassan Giordano where he outlined all of the candidates, and he contacted many of them. He said that she has already told people she will not seek the United States Senate seat.
Oh, that would be too bad.
I've not seen that anyway. I've not heard her say that. I've seen her say that officially.
Well, let's not get distracted by that. I'm just telling you, that's one reporter's story that she's taken around.
Right.
Now, also, when I said Brooks, Angela also Brooks, who is the Prince George's County State's Attorney, a lot of people would love to see a young, talented public figure like Angela consider running for the Senate. Now, can she put an infrastructure that would take to run statewide? Can she raise the money? She's a strong, amazing African-American woman who has been state's attorney for two terms. She would be very, very interesting.
So we do have to.
But she did refuse to run for attorney general this last time, and she was that same exact person. So if she wouldn't run for attorney general, perhaps she won't run for this either.
Uh-huh. We have to take a brief break here, and I know Jolene, you have to run. Jolene Ivey, it's always great to have you on the show. I'm glad you can be
a
commentator
here.
Thanks so
much, Mark. We'll be talking
to you soon.
Appreciate it.
And we'll come back with Anthony McCarthy and Tony Campbell and Odette Ramos at this break. And you at 410-319-8888. Mayorkey, the first caller up. Do not go away. We're going to come right back. We're going out with Cab Calloway, Minnie the Moocher, recorded on the Brunswick label in New York City on this day in 1931 and become the first jazz recording to sell a million copies. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Madonna, Like a Prayer. In 1981, in 1989 today, wow, a day after Madonna's Like a Prayer debuted in a two-minute Pepsi commercial for Madonna's Like a Prayer, it hits MPT and caused an uproar. The innocent scenes from the ad, Madonna is seen witnessing a crime, kissing a black man, dancing in front of burning crosses, and Pepsi that was really blown out by this whole thing that she did. And then signed into a $5 million endorsement deal, was threatened with a boycott because of that, and then dropped their association with Madonna. So this is why we play her at this moment. And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Right. As you feel, what comes next here in politics in Maryland? Anthony McCarthy's with us. Antonio Campbell's with us. Julian Ivey's with us. 410-319-8888. You're with us. What do you think? Where is this going to go? Merrick in Baltimore, you're on the air at 410-319-8888.
Good morning, all.
Good morning, Mary.
This is awesome. I was very shocked that the senator decided to retire. And I just really appreciate her leadership and the way that she has really a voice a lot of times for the voiceless. And in that regard, I was very disappointed with the Washington Blade coverage. I think it was the editor, Kevin Bath, really slammed her for her vote on DOMA. And for not coming out of the closet. And to me, that speaks of the viciousness often we find in the LGBT community against women. Just because someone didn't raise a rainbow flag when you wanted her to, doesn't mean that her leadership wasn't valuable. And people are allowed to evolve. So I just wanted to put that out there because I feel a lot of times, you know, when you have someone who has been a champion of the people, and we've seen this in her early days here in Baltimore, that it's sad that people take this time to throw cheap pot shots at someone who really led the people.
Thank you so much, Merrick, for that. And I think, yeah, she's gone through a lot of that around her sexuality, whatever it is. And who cares? And
it's nobody
who cares.
Cares.
It's like, exactly.
Whose business is it, right? And that drives me crazy when people do that. People do that, have done that with a number of our political leaders in the past, especially many of our black political leaders. And I think that it's just unseemly. We don't like to do unseemly too much in the Steiner Show if we can help. If we can avoid it.
You just played Madonna, so what a
wow. Right.
Come on now, man. Madonna's all right. So let me just a couple of political questions here. For you all, why do you think O'Malley said no? He would have clearly been the front runner if he had lost. It'd been a huge embarrassment, though. But yeah, he would have been the front runner and has one of the best strategic organizations in politics. Period. He doesn't lose elections. He's taken a lot of risks becoming mayor of Baltimore. That was he knows how to do this. Why do you think he said no?
I think he saw his poll numbers. I think he saw what happened in 2014 to Anthony Brown, who was his handpicked successor, and this wasn't about. 2014 wasn't about Anthony Brown. It was about Martin O'Malley. It was about his legacy. And, you know, three times in the last 2 weeks before the election, I was on your show and Sean, your show, and heard people who called into this station. Most of them were African-American, lived in the city, and Democrats, and they didn't want a third O'Malley term, period, in a statement. So I think if he was to run and lose a Senate seat in his home state, that would have been the end of his political career. It would have been over.
I think he's got higher aspirations, and you know he's going to do something nationally in the next election, whether it's run for president or try to be helpful to Hillary. I don't know, but he's got higher aspirations. I think he's looking beyond Maryland at this point, and he's been looking beyond Maryland for a while. So I think he's letting the Democrats fight it out here in Maryland.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I was surprised that Governor O'Malley took himself out so very early. So quickly. And I have to tell you, in all the conversations, and politically insiders were just chatting up about this decision by Senator Mikulski yesterday, his name was top of most people's lists.
Absolutely.
Even folks who said, I wouldn't prefer Martin O'Malley, but they acknowledged that if he wanted it, it was his to lose. Now, what is his inside thinking? I'm not really sure. It'll be very interesting to talk to folks over the next couple of days to find out what was behind that decision for him not to get in this Senate.
See what off-record comments we can find.
We seem to find them.
Especially when a filing deadline isn't until January.
Next year, that's right.
You can wait until the summer or the fall and make a decision not to run.
But he may have wanted to commit to this presidential race and let his supporters know that he is in this until what will – I don't want to say the end, but but Hillary Clinton will be a formidable challenger.
Almost impossible. Yeah. I don't get stuck with Martin O'Malley here. I just want to go to some other people and talk about them, but where this might end up. As a person in Annapolis said to me yesterday, every congressional representative is thinking about running right now except for Steny Hoyer. Other than Steny Hoyer, because he's got so much power in the
Congress.
Right,
he doesn't want to lose the power that he's got. Right? He doesn't want to start from the beginning.
Considering this run.
Yeah.
And I think O'Malley, I think he interesting decision he made, I think the Brown, we've heard Brown may be thinking about running. I doubt that's going to happen. Because I think more than Hogan winning, I often say that Brown lost because the Democrats did not come out to vote for Brown at all. He didn't listen to O'Malley when he ran his campaign. There was a big rift between them. And that was clear from talking to their staffs. But let's look at where this could go. I mean, I think Don Edwards is I agree that he's very much in this race and is not about to drop out yet. It's a question of who raises money and who has political will to do this. What about Heather Mazier? Does she run for the U.S. Senate, do you think?
I think she does, but the question is, can she expand on the 15% of the progressive side of the Democrat Party that she's got? That's the question, especially when you get a Van Hollen and Delaney and Edwards in that race, too. That's going to basically suck up all the moderates. So can she expand past that 15%? But she'll at least get that 15%. I mean, she'll get that from the constituency.
You don't think she's going to run, do you?
I don't think she will get in this race. No. I think she represents a very strong part of the party that really came to bear. But a lot of support for her. She spoke frankly, like Barbara Mikulski. But people were turned off by or running away from Anthony Brown. And they were looking for an alternative, and she was a progressive alternative. She wasn't just an alternative. She offered a real clear difference when she talked about her vision for the state of Maryland. I don't think she could raise money nationally at the level you would have to for a United States Senate race yet. I think Heather Mazier is a rising star in the Democratic Party. I don't think she has the infrastructure, could put it together, or raise the money.
Right. One of the things I was thinking about this, and my producer was thinking about this just a moment ago as well. And I don't want to get stuck on Heather Mazier here. I just want to throw this out here. She's spending a lot of time on her organic farm in the Eastern Shore with her wife, right? Andy Harris might run for this U.S. Senate seat because he wants to go up. That leaves that wide open. And she's talked about running for Congress from the Eastern Shore. And we've heard that contemplation. That's a possibility where Heather Mazier might go if Andy Harris ends up running for U.S. Senate, which I could see. I could see Andy Harris on the Republican side. That's another factor
that we have to consider here. We've got all of these men that are considering running for Barbara Mikulski's seat. And so then as women, we need to think about, okay, should we go for these congressional seats then? I even had a bunch of texts this morning that, we need – a lot of us are going to start getting together to think about, well, so if – Van Hollen runs, if all these people run, if they're running, they're going to lose that seat. So –
Right.
And I had a conversation.
Right.
So we've got to think about how we can, take this opportunity to get more people up there. If Missouri wants to run on the Eastern Shore, that would be awesome. There's other people in other parts of the state that might want to run in those congressional seats. So that we're not losing anybody, but we have an opportunity to gain some seats for women from all over the state.
That's a really interesting point.
So it's not just about this seat. It's really about some of the other seats that are going to open up if this happens, because those guys are going to lose their seat. So we've got so there's lots of sort of thinking around this that we have to go through.
And I think a similar conversation is taking place in the 7th Congressional District. Congressman Cummings were to run for this seat, for this United States Senate seat, he would have to give up his congressional seat.
Right.
And already people are talking about the strong contenders for that congressional seat. So people are looking past – now, how important this Senate seat is, for sure, but looking for the shift that takes place when someone at that level of a Barbara Mikulski – and we saw it when Sarbanes stepped down from his Senate seat as well. Catherine Pugh, and the list goes on, of very strong African-American women who would immediately be front-runners for that congressional
especially
seat.
Especially if SRB, Central Alliance Blank, decides
mayor?
To run
– Sheila Dixon.
But I think now even more so that yesterday before I heard that O'Malley said he – was definitively not going to run, I didn't think very much of a Stephanie Rawlings Blake chance to run for the U.S. Senate. But now, given how much she's tied to the Obama White House and how many people like her nationally, I could see her thinking about running for the U.S. Senate.
Well, especially if Donna Edwards doesn't
I don't
run.
Think she's going to do it. But, may run for the congressional seat,
yes.
But mm-hmm. I don't think she would run for Senate. She still doesn't have that statewide name. And I think, she could run for a larger seat if that, Congressman Cummings' seat, if that happens.
So who do you think on the Republican side are the strongest people thinking about this race right now?
Dan Bongino immediately comes to mind. The problem for Dan, even though I think they're talking about him all over the country. He's on all of these information shows, news shows, I guess I could call them. Anyway, but they're talking about, but he has been in, he's been running for public office for like the last 7 or 8 years.
And losing.
And I know it's taken a toll on his family. I know it's taken a toll on his ability to make money. So I don't look for him to get in the race, but I think he'd be extraordinarily strong. But is he up to it once again? Michael Steele has already, some people have been texting him and getting messages back where he will not say no. That he won't say no. But also Andy Harris, given what happened in the governor's race, Andy Harris or a conservative like Andy Harris could make a very interesting run for the United States Senate.
It's true.
Well, it's only Dan's on a run in two races, 12 and 14, 12 for the Senate and 14 for the House. The smart play for Bongino would be to wait to see what John Delaney does. If Delaney decides to run for Senate, he only lost
that
seat by 2,000 votes.
Mm-hmm. He could go for that seat.
You run for the mm-hmm. 6th district and you win the House seat.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you said before, Anthony, is exactly right. You don't want to be an Alan Keyes. Perennial candidate, run all the time, lose all the time. You don't want to go that route. And so, I've talked to Dan a couple times, not since yesterday, but, he's really considering not wanting to have that perennial loser around his neck. So I think that's an important point.
This could be a really interesting shakeup in Maryland politics come 2016. I just realized how much this that year actually means, both city council wise here, all the way from city council to running for the U.S. Senate. How that things could be really shifting.
Well, and it's a different race being a primary in April, frankly. Because it's hard to knock on. You can't knock on doors in
winter.
10-degree weather like we've had today, this year, and you can't knock on doors before around 5:30 when we usually do because
it's dark.
It's dark.
Right.
So at least from the council perspective, it is a different kind of campaign, and everybody's just trying to figure it out. It's radio, it's internet ads, it's something different. It's lots of mail, lots of mail.
I mean, there are a couple other Republican names that are out there. I saw something on Politico and the Washington Post. Kathy Schlage, who's the minority whip in the House from Baltimore County. And there's, of course, there's the Ben Carson ghost that he's still here in Maryland.
He's got a house in Baltimore County.
It's going to be interesting. If that doesn't come through, Ben might come back to Maryland. That would be a race.
Mark, I know this sounds strange, but I think what's going to happen, at least on the Democratic side, is that fairly quickly, I'd say within the next 4 to 8 weeks, the Democrats will come together. Now, I'm not saying they're going to shut everybody down, but I think there will be a favorite among those candidates that express interest. The Democrats do not want to lose this Senate seat. And there's still a lot of work for the Democrats to do to reconnect with their base, which they lost in the last governor's election. And I think that there won't be the vicious fight. There will certainly be a lot of interest, but I think some of it will be shut down, and they will begin to coalesce around one or two candidates that they would like to see compete for this seat.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, being a member of the elected member of the party at this point, I think one of the things that happened during the 2014 race was that the party didn't come. I mean, there was scattered all over the place, and when the campaign came to our central committee and asked our opinion and then didn't take our opinion about what they should be doing, which did happen, then our central committee was totally disengaged. And that's not really the role. And so, but then also we just approved in this Baltimore City State Central Committee a plan to increase turnout in Baltimore City in particular. And to increase Democratic turnout. So that's one of our roles, and we worked very hard on this very strategic plan to make that happen. So I think the party is going to thinking through what the strategies are, and certainly with now this new factor, making sure that stays Democratic. And a lot of us want it to stay a woman, but as long as we get some other women around the state, that would be fine.
And it seems like all the major senatorial possibilities, most of them are centered, except for the people who talk about Stedman Rollins Blake, who's been getting a lot of national play. She's on TV all the time. She's going to be president of the National Conference of Mayors coming up, and she's giving herself a different profile. And it seems to be at the White House every other month for something, a dinner or something. But almost all the candidates are coming from the Montgomery County area, from the D.C. I should say the D.C. area, the D.C. suburbs is what I'm trying to say.
Well, that's right? that's strategic, because when Ben Cardin ultimately won the nomination, it was unspoken, but I think a lot of people spoke about it, that the next, as Jolene did, the next candidate for the United States Senate really should come from the Washington suburbs, Prince George's County, Montgomery County. Now, will people adhere to that? We'll see. But I certainly know it was certainly an unspoken rule.
Well, and the way that the congressional districts are so gerrymandered, we don't even know whether we would have somebody from Baltimore City even in the congressional seat if Congressman Cumming runs. So that's a factor to think about, at least from the Baltimore City perspective, to continue at least to have somebody there.
Well, you still have 70% of the vote coming from Baltimore City, though, even though you got a splinter in Columbia and
just never know,
and you know a light dusting in northern Baltimore County, but sure, most of it's coming from the city anyway.
Sure.
Yeah, and remember, in the last senatorial race, when Ben Cardin first ran, that big race, Quaese only lost by 3 points.
That's right. In that primary.
Right.
And Quaese, remember, had no money, no campaign staff, not a lot happening. I mean, he had name, but
yeah,
I'm saying, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he didn't have all that else. But he came within 3 points of beating Ben Cardin. That was a very, very interesting, polite, tough race. You know, and mm-hmm. That's what I think might happen again. That's why I think it could be wide open. I think it could be in the Democratic primary, a polite, tough race taking place to see who takes on. And you've got Delaney, who plays the moderate. I'm sure he's got lots of money in the bank because it's his money, and he's thinking about running, right?
Van Hollen has $1 million easily in the
and
bank.
And Van Hollen wants to be in the Senate.
Right.
He's always wanted
he's
to be
always
in the Senate.
Always wanted that, yes.
John Paul Sarbanes, J.P. Sarbanes, has the name Sarbanes, and could seriously consider running for the U.S. Senate.
And could easily raise the money.
And could easily raise the money and because of one of the front runners given, you know, as he did in the U.S. congressional race. And you've got Donna Edwards, who has to make her mind whether she's going to be a progressive leader in Congress or try to go for the U.S. Senate. This could be, you know, it's going to be really interesting who ends up also on the political spectrum, from moderate to progressive, who ends up being on the Democratic side. Because I honestly think, and see what you all think about this, and just realistically, I said this early on in Hogan's campaign. I said Hogan has not a shot to win, and I was wrong.
And I said,
you said he was going to win. And then I kind of switched gears a little bit towards the end, watching this race, saying, Brown's blowing this race. I think Hogan's going to win. And because I was like, because you watch Brown just kind of not run a very good campaign. So the question, how does it match up, do you think, with the future Republicans and Democrats in this state? What do you all think about that?
Well, I think that the Republicans are definitely empowered. There's no doubt about that. We're seeing that in the state legislature as well, with certain pieces of legislation going in that would have never gone in if we didn't have a Republican governor. Now those are getting defeated because we have a Democratic legislature. So I think they're empowered, and I think that this race, the governor's race, people were really rethinking what their values were, and a lot of it was around the economy. So the issue, it's going to be an issue-related fight. It's going to be around the economy, not social issues. And so the Democrats have to be better about that message because they weren't very good at it during the governor's race. So I think the party's going to really – I think there's already going to be some serious meetings about what that message is going to be, so that it isn't a repeat of the 2014 election.
And I think that, as we said before, Democrats are going to be very conscious of how this looks to the voters in the state of Maryland. And they don't want to look disorganized. They don't want it. And they said it probably wouldn't be a vicious primary at all. But I think that Democrats will be very focused on who has the best chance of taking on whomever the Republican is and winning this seat. a seat that they would have taken for granted maybe 2 or 3 years ago. They
That's
certainly
right.
are
exactly
not
right.
taking
can't,
for granted.
Can't do it now.
That's exactly right.
Now. What were we going to say?
If it's another white male.
White male running for the
white
US
male
on the Republican Demi- side, you mean?
White male Democrat nominee.
Oh, oh.
Uh-huh. Oh. Democrat Party's in trouble.
That's interesting.
They are in trouble.
You're saying
it's got to be a woman or it's got to be an African American, because what happened in 2014 wasn't necessarily because, like you said, it wasn't because Hogan won. It's because Brown had A, no message. B, he wasn't in the community, and so
he was not in the community.
And you've sure. and you've had at least 2 decades of me of my being involved politically that you've had African Americans overlooked for the top rung in the Democrat Party. So. You know, part of it has got to be not only the message but the messenger, because if it, you've already created leverage for Republicans to reach into Baltimore City, Prince George's County. If that continues, it's going to be an open ball game.
And folks, towards the end of the program here, I was remiss not doing this earlier. Let me do it again. What do you think should happen in the U.S. Senate race? Who would you vote for? Who would you want to see win? Who would you like to see run at 410-319-8888 to replace Barbara Mikulski? 410-319-8888. Love to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, I think that – and part of what you're saying I think is true, and to query this for a moment on the heels of what Tony was just saying, that the last election showed what happens if the African-American vote and the progressive vote stays home, as they did in Howard County, Montgomery County, Baltimore City, Prince George's, Charles County,
Western Baltimore County,
mm-hmm. yeah, right, and that was the margin of victory for Larry Hogan, and I think there's a point to you can't can you what would happen is that true, do you think, from two former Democratic operatives here in the room about if it's the white male that they could be in trouble?
Well, I think that you're on to something. Hogan got more than 30% of the African American vote. Well, more than 30% of the vote in the city of Baltimore. But remember,
Baltimore.
It was a low turnout. But a great deal of those voters were African American. And Mark, we all know African Americans in this room who are long-term Democrats who voted for Larry Hogan. I was stunned by the number of my friends who told me they voted for Larry Hogan. I think that the party has to be very careful. We have only had 2 statewide African Americans elected on the ticket with white men. Anthony Brown and Michael Steele.
Right.
We've never had a statewide African-American elected in this city, I mean, in the state of Maryland. And African-Americans are talking about that more and more. Why didn't we choose an African-American to run for attorney general? Why can't we choose? So I think it's a worry, and maybe African-Americans in the Democratic Party will, instead of lip service and we want to be counted, and will stand up and say, we want a candidate.
Well, and women are thinking the same
exactly.
thing. You know,
exactly.
we haven't had a statewide, you know,
uh-huh.
you know, except for Barbara Mikulski. So it's a big deal. I think the Democrats really have to think this through. And candidates who are interested, you know, we've got to prop them up. We've got to make sure we've got the right person, and we work hard for them. I mean, this is especially, again, since we're going to be campaigning in the wintertime, we've just got to get out there early and get that name recognition out for whoever, you know, the women and African Americans, whoever decide. But I think there is a factor where, you know, if we have, you know, 2 senators that are white males in the state of Maryland, that's going to be problematic, I think, for
I
a
agree.
Lot of people.
I agree.
And you can see there's, the 2 things. A, that this is a national trend, I think, in the Democratic Party. There's a problem, people getting disgruntled and staying home. The Democratic Party is seeing it across the country, and Republican activists are energized. Conservative activists are energized in this country and in this state. But we also remember this is 2016, so it's a presidential primary, and people are pulled out for presidential primary.
It's going to be a
with
huge
Hillary Clinton, especially if she's
yeah.
the candidate. That's going to have a factor in this as well.
Absolutely. I think the turnout is going to be huge. And that's one of the reasons why our Central Committee did this plan to say, okay, we've got this huge turnout coming in. We've got to enhance it so that, you know, we keep these voters out voting, not just this one election, but keep them voting every other election as well. I mean, that's really the key, is to keep people, even in the off-presidential races, to keep voting.
Anthony?
Well, I think that it's going to be fascinating 2016, from the presidential race
yeah.
to the Senate race here in Maryland, to maybe some upsets in the – let me not say that yet. But I think that the city council in Baltimore, where my love is and I love municipal government, is a ripe opportunity is presenting itself for change to come. And I think from all the way from that Senate race down to local elections here in the city of Baltimore, everybody needs to get engaged. The incumbents need to get engaged, but a lot of challenges are coming that are going to put them to the test. It's going to be exciting in 2016.
It's funny, I haven't had a purely political show on the Mark Steiner Show for quite some time. just talking about this kind of stuff, and I think that I'm really interested to see where this kind of falls out. And I was going to raise the issues we'll do tomorrow about Netanyahu speaking in Congress in our congressional delegation here. The only one of whom who has walking out today, as far as I know, is Don Edwards.
Don Edwards, that's what I heard.
I think Cummings is not walking out, right?
No.
Elijah Cummings.
No, I understand that when at least up until yesterday, his staff had said he will be attending the address by Netanyahu.
So it's very interesting how that what factor that will play out also in the Senate race, because Donna Edwards is staked out again if she runs a very progressive position in this way on the Democratic side. How that will play out in the state.
I think anybody who's walking out is really protesting Boehner, not necessarily Netanyahu. Let's just be real clear that this was a Boehner issue, not about he wanted to disrespect the president. It wasn't about Netanyahu.
Except people take things and make
how does that play out in Silver Spring and Pikesville, Montgomery County?
Right.
But,
yes. I'm with you.
Especially in the Democrat primary. How is that going to play out?
Well, there's also a lot of disgruntled feeling about Netanyahu and the rightward trend of Israel.
That's right.
There's a whole lot
more than half of the Democrats that are not attending Netanyahu's speech today are Jewish.
Right.
Yeah. So
Jewish. We're not attending the speech.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the majority of African American representatives are not, except for a lot of Cummins, are not attending as well.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting. We're going to wrestle with that tomorrow and see what that means for the future and those relationships as well. I think we'll see how this goes. We're going to do our best to have Barb Mikulski on. We've known each other for a long time. I'd love to have an exit time to talk with her about her past and where she's going and why she's leaving. She's probably the longest standing woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chair of Appropriations, and maybe the shortest senator.
Probably.
Maybe. Maybe.
4'10"
Wow.
Yeah, she's under 5 feet.
Mm-hmm. Definitely under 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But I can still see her in that light hair at the rallies to stop that highway that was going to cut Baltimore asunder.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And go through Leakin Park and destroy Leakin Park. And remember that what she built and how she built that political name for herself in this city. And her, this is a closing thought, just about her legacy. Her legacy also has to do with what she brought as a woman. And she also was that legacy with politics changed in Maryland from, on the white side of the world, from the blue bloods,
the blue collars,
to the Eastern and Southern European immigrant families who came to Baltimore here in the early 1900s with Mikulski and Sarbanes and Cardin and the rest, and that kind of ascendancy as well. So she was part of an interesting transition. So I want to thank our guest here, Dr. Antonio Campbell. Tony Campbell, professor of political science at Towson University, Republican political operative. Good to have you here in the studio. Always, Tony, great to see you.
You too, Mark.
And he was right from the beginning about Hogan, and I was wrong, which is not saying one last time. Odette Ramos, member of the 43rd District State Central Committee and a Democratic activist and president and CEO of Strategic Management Consulting. Always good to have you here, Odette. Glad you could make it today.
Thanks.
And my dear friend, Anthony McCarthy, who has been my colleague here for almost the whole 22 years that I've been on the air.
Love it. Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you, brother.
Happy anniversary.
And listen to him. What's today?
Thursday.
That's tomorrow. What's today? Tuesday.
Tuesday.
What year is this? Thursday night, 7 p.m., Anthony McCarthy Show. Do not miss it. So we're going to take a very brief break. On the way to break, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. And on our way to break, going to Soundbites, it's Pachelbel's Canon in D. Johann Pachelbel passed away on this day in 1706, one of my favorite pieces and many people's favorite pieces. When you hear this, you'll remember it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.